Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. We reach back into the vaults of ART for our next show. Our next show is a recreation of Candy Matson with Ruth Last as Candy and Esther McVeigh as Rembrandt.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Well, that was a pleasant afternoon, Rembrandt, dear.
Pleasant, but unprofitable. As many times as I've been to the horse races, I never seem to have the gumption to quit when I'm ahead.
Like Damon Runyon once said, horse players die broke.
I'm also reminded of that old song, horses don't bet on people. But the scenery was lovely, and I enjoyed it.
Yes, Golden Gate Fields is a beautiful park.
Why are you headed up into the Berkeley Hills, Candy?
I wanted to avoid that traffic on the East Shore Highway this time of afternoon, and to... I just had a thought.
Oh, bully for you. So few people have them anymore. What might the idea be?
I know a cozy little spot to eat over in Lafayette. How would you like to have dinner there instead of town?
Splendid, girl. Sounds delightful.
My,
this is rather forlorn country up this
way. Yes, the real estate boys haven't caught up with it yet. Wait until they see the results of the recent census. Homes will be sprouting all over these hills like poppies are now.
Help me, please.
What was that?
It came from back there, Candy. Must be from that house. It's the only one around here.
Come back. Help, Syria.
It is that house. Let's find out what this is all about, Ducky.
Now there's a fine start for a cozy dinner in Lafayette. It could only happen to Candy Matson, San Francisco's well-known private investigator, whether she's at home in her penthouse on Telegraph Hill or at the races in Albany. It makes no difference. Trouble always seems to pop up its dangerous head, and this was no exception. A quiet afternoon, watching the wrong horses finish in the right positions. Then driving along a road on top of Berkeley's skyline, and out of the dusk, a man's cry for help. That cry led to a maze of events that would have done justice to an Alfred Hitchcock movie. Want to hear what developed after the man called for help? Well, here's the gal to do it, Candy Matson.
What was that the man said about a maze of events? He's right, but in oh such a mild way. Just to pick a word at random, it was murder. Sorry if the word sets up a feeling like a fingernail down a blackboard, but leave us confronted. That's what it was. Murder. And it might have gone on infinitum if I... Well, that's part of the story and comes later. What comes firster was the fact that I stopped the car, turned around, and drove up in front of this lonely house high above Berkeley, overlooking all of San Francisco Bay. The front door was open, so Rembrandt and I walked right in. There, by an open window, was a man on his knees, draped over the windowsill from where he had called.
Thank you. Oh. Thank you.
Oh, it's a heart attack. Quick, Rembrandt. Help me get him on the couch.
Surely.
Then we'll get his collar open and loosen his tie. There we are.
My wife. Gone for doctor.
Good. How long ago?
Don't know. Ten minutes. Maybe. Can't wait. Too late. Here. Take this envelope. Deliver.
Take it easy. Don't try to talk. Save all the strength you possibly can.
This is important. Must talk. Must.
I got his tie off, Candy.
Yes, never mind his collar, though. It won't do him any good. Not now.
Candy, you don't mean he's...
He's dead?
I'm afraid so. I can't feel any pulse.
This is a fine kettle of smelt.
How do we explain this, Dove?
The only way to explain it, just tell what happened, the way it happened.
Who will believe that we were just driving along a lonely road, heard this chap call for help, went to his aid, and then had him expire gracefully half a minute later? It's too pat, Candy.
Oh, the truth is always hard to swallow, Rembrandt.
Well, this is cozy. What do we do now?
Leave, report it to the police, and be on our way. There's nothing we can do by hanging around.
Well, we could stay and console the widow when she returns.
No, I hate scenes like that. She'll cry, then I'll cry, and I'll feel miserable for a week. Come on, Ducky, let's go.
You aren't forgetting the envelope, are you?
No, that was the request of a dying man. I'll follow through with it. Rembrandt, what's wrong?
Oh, it startled me. A black cat just ran across the doorstep in front of us.
Now, don't start anything like that. A cat's a cat, whether it's black, green, or beige. It's only the kind that walk on two legs that make me worry.
Well, start worrying then. Here comes one of the males of the species.
No, pardon me.
Certainly. Are you the doctor?
Yes, that's right.
I'm afraid you're just a little bit late, doctor. The gentleman in there is dead.
What? Jerome dead? Oh, the fool. I warned him.
I'm not being curious, you understand. But where's the gentleman's wife?
Why, inside, isn't she?
No, just before he died, he said she'd gone to get you.
She called me on the phone. I assumed it was from the house here.
Well,
I just knew something like this would happen. It was that black cat.
Oh, Ducky, come on. By the way, doctor, what's the gentleman's name?
Moreland. Jerome Moreland. Wait a minute, just a moment, young lady. If you don't know him, what were you doing inside?
That's a good question. Answer the good doctor, Candy.
Well, my friend here and I were driving up the road. Obviously, Mr. Moreland made it to the window, opened it, and called to us as we were passing. I turned about, went in, the door was open, found him on his knees up against the windowsill. We lifted him onto the couch, tried to make him comfortable, but it was too late. He died in less than 30 seconds.
Come along with me, will you please? First, I want to examine Jerome. Then I'll have to have some information from you for my reports.
We went back inside the house, and the doctor busied himself with whatever doctors busy themselves with when they examine a corpse. Rembrandt and I stood in the entrance hall and watched while we had a smoke. When the medic finished, he fired a volley of questions at us, where we lived, how long, occupations, etc., and etc. Then he excused us. It felt funny being on the opposite end of an inquisition. But the doctor was nice enough about it, and it had to be done. We gave up the idea of dinner in Lafayette, drove back across the Bay Bridge, and ate at a place in Chinatown. And all the time I had one tiny gnawing thought in the back of my head. What had happened to Moreland's wife? When one's husband is dying, you don't stop off for a pound of hamburger and call the doctor from the butcher shop. After dinner, Rembrandt, who had been silent, spoke up.
Dove, I can't place me finger on the exact cause, but I have a slight touch of the vapors.
Oh, Ducky, I'm sorry.
Well, it was either the sight of that poor man dying on the couch or the tomato chow yuck. In either case, I'd like to get home, attack the aspirin bottle, and retire to me Downy. Would you be a love and drive me to me domicile?
Certainly, dear. I've got a little errand I want to run anyway.
Oh, girl, are you going to entangle yourself in this Berkeley thing?
You know me and my hunches, Rembrandt. Something smells about this deal. I don't like it. In the first place, I'm not too sure about that doctor. The more I think about it, the more it strikes me that he gave the late Jerome Moreland a very amateurish going over.
I noticed that, too.
That was a family home, Duffy. It showed great, huge gobs of loving care. If Moreland's wife was that kind of a homemaker, she wouldn't just run out of the house and call the doctor and forget to come back.
I admit, it does sound suspicious. It's that cat. Believe me.
You do have a touch of the vapors. Come on, lamb. I'll take you home. You're becoming delirious. I drove Rembrandt to her place on California Street, then over Kearney to the Hall of Justice. It was just possible that my number one boy, Inspector Ray Millard of San Francisco Homicide, might still be on the job homiciding. The only place to park was the red zone, so I took the loyalty oath, parked, and went into the grim, gray structure of justice. Mallard was still homiciding.
Well, Cupcake, what brings you around to these dark dungeons?
Not love, not at this late hour.
If that isn't just like a suspicious foot flat. A girl drops around to say hello, and right off the bat she gets a verbal left right in the chin. You gotta admit, Candy, the thing looks phony. Social calls are usually made a bit earlier in the evening.
Okay, you've got me. I'm here on business.
You see? If you'd admitted it in the first place, we would have saved 5 lines of dialogue. What's the pitch?
I just met a doctor, Ducky.
Oh, how thrilling. That doesn't happen to just anyone.
Said doctor affected me like aphis.
Ooh, what's the aphis with the aphis?
It has something to do with a gent who died under my very nose, Mallard dear.
That's occupational with you. Now, suppose we start from the beginning. Then I can sort of sort the facts.
Do you know a man by the name of Jerome Moreland?
Jerome Moreland? Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. He's merely one of the world's outstanding scientists.
Well, shake hands then with the hand that unloosened his tie. He up and died this afternoon.
What? Why, this is terrible, Candy.
Mallard, dear, I've never seen you quite so upset.
Well, it's going to upset the entire country. Mm-hmm. Dr. Moreland was a very vital cog in the United States international security.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
You will when you start reading page 1 in tonight's papers. Mm. Come, Candy, you're better than that. Moreland, doesn't it mean anything to you?
No. Sorry.
He's the man who played one of the leading roles in developing the A-bomb. He contributed largely to the H-bomb, and from what I've heard, he was working on something currently that would have outmoded both of them.
Oh, sure, now I remember. He made the cover of Time about a month ago, didn't he?
That's the one.
Imagine, and I was there when he died.
How'd it happen, Candy?
Rembrandt and I were driving up this road in Berkeley. We heard this fellow call for help from his house. We went back, and there he was. Heart attack, I'm sure.
What a shame. Huh. Moreland meant an awful lot to the security of this country. He was one of the colossal brains in the world. Of course, you'll be called for the inquest, Candy.
Oh, sure, that I know. After all the data the doctor put down, I'm going to be the star.
Who's the doctor?
What?
His name. Who was the doctor? What was the doctor's name?
Mallard, and this you won't believe. I forgot to ask.
And you make a living as a private eye. Oh, Candy, give it up.
Marry me and I will.
Oh, let's not change the subject.
One of these days, one of my hints is going to seep through that sponge-like head of yours. In the meantime, thanks for the information on Jerome Moreland.
Are you leaving, Cupcake?
Uh-huh. I've gone as far as I can here. That supersonic barrier of yours, Mallard, is a little hard to crack. As I left the Hall of Justice, the fog was oozing in through the Golden Gate. The lights of the city shot up and in turn was sent back from the fog bank, giving the town a fluorescent look. I bought a paper, and sure enough, there were details on the death of Dr. Jerome Moreland. Headlines, that's what. He was everything Mallard said he was, a world-renowned figure, and of course, my name was mentioned prominently as having been there at the time of his death. I went home, hit the sack, and had a fist full of dreams for myself. Mallard was the star, in color. The fade-out came with me in Mallard's arms. Just as the bell rang and saved me from going another round. It was 9 o'clock the following morning. Hello. Yukon 28209.
Miss Candy Manson?
That's right.
Sorry to wake you. This is the coroner's office in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this.
You'll have to appear at the inquest of Dr. Jerome Moreland this afternoon at 1 o'clock in this office.
Okay, I'll be there. Thanks.
Quite all right.
That quite definitely was the end of Mallard in color, so I got up, showered, pressed, and started applying lipstick, and that's when I remembered. looking for the lipstick in my purse. There was the letter the good Dr. Moreland had entrusted to me. I'd actually forgotten all about it. I looked at the envelope. It was addressed to Hans Mittelstadt's Snug Harbor Hotel, Embarcadero, San Francisco. I had an appointment to have my hair done, so Mr. Mittelstadt would have to wait. I dropped down to my girl, Veda. I sat, she worked, and several pin curls later, I picked up Rembrandt and drove over to the coroner's office in Berkeley. It was the usual routine, questions, answers. I testified, then Rembrandt, then the doctor we had bumped into the day before. Still no Mrs. Moreland. That, to me, was the major issue in the whole deal. There was only one opening. That was Hans Mittelstadt at the Snug Harbor Hotel on the waterfront in San Francisco. So that's where I went. Stand to windward, and I'll do it again. Mittelstadt. Hans Mittelstadt.
I don't believe we have anyone registered here under that name. Of course, I've just returned from vacation.
Well, if you can get your mind off the Whispering Pines, would you take a look in your book?
Yes, of course. I'm terribly sorry. There doesn't seem to be any Mittelstadt listed.
One moment, sister. What's that right there?
Oh, I must have overlooked that. That is Mittelstadt, isn't it?
It doesn't spell Smithy. Now, come on, what's the room number?
Why don't you beat it? You're just leading with your chin.
It's my chin, and I'll lead with it if I want to.
Are you acquainted with Herr Mittelstadt?
Acquainted with him, of course. Not only that, I have a very important letter for him.
Well, why didn't you say so? Room 332? To the left, after you get out of the elevator.
The clerk lifted an eyebrow toward the north, indicating where the elevator was. I found it, the elevator, not the eyebrow, and hoisted myself to the third floor. A few steps around a dingy corridor, and I was face to face with room 332. I knocked. I cooled my heels for about 10 seconds and knocked again. Still no answer. So I tried the door. It squeaked open. Blinds were down, and I was in almost a dusky darkness. I stumbled around for the light switch, found it on the wall next to the door, and clicked it on. Ooh, what I saw wasn't pretty. The body of what had been an attractive woman in her early 40s sprawled out on the floor on the other side of the bed. It only took one look to tell me that she was dead. A set of finger marks around her neck told me how it had been done. And another look at her neck told me who it was. A locket with the name inscribed in back. Ruth Moreland. I'm glad I got that far because that's when the lights went out. I floated through space for an eon or two. Then vaguely something came into audible focus. A voice. A familiar voice. Yes, it was Mallard. At first it sounded as though he were coming from a deep well. So that's where I was. Then his voice changed.
Come on, Candy. Snap out of it. You've been out long enough. Oh, come on, Cupcake. Get with it. I'm tired of having to hover over you like a duenna.
So you've got a lump on your head. Come on, I got work to do.
Little by little, his voice came into normal shape.
Candy, be reasonable. Untwirl your eyes and talk to me.
The lights came back on. Mallard stopped spinning around and I saw where I was. A cot in an emergency hospital.
That's a girl.
Hi, Mallard. What happened?
Well, supposing you tell me.
I would if I could, but I can't. I know I got smacked, though.
That's for sure. You could use the knob on your head for a bookend.
But how did I get here?
It seems whoever tapped you on the noggin didn't want it to take permanently. They gave you the treatment lightly, just enough to put you in a blackout, and then went through your purse like a tornado through Kansas. The room clerk at a joint called the Snug Harbor phones the police to come and pick up one limp tomato called Candy Matson, and one very dead tomato, name of Ruth Moreland. Did you have anything to do with Mrs. Moreland's ugly finish, Candy?
Oh, you know better than that, Mallard.
Well, answer me this, then. Could that hotel clerk have given you the wallop?
Might, but I don't think so.
I was just wondering. She had shifty eyes, like the 49er backfield. Okay, so somebody goes through your purse. Candy, look at me as best you can. That's a girl. Now, do you have information somebody could be after? It's not in your purse.
Mallory, have you been going through my purse, too?
I don't get so excited. It was only in the line of duty.
Don't you realize that a woman's purse is a private domain?
Well, not when the owner of said purse is laid out unconscious on a hotel room floor. Now, answer my question. Do you have any information someone could be after?
I already did. I'll repeat the answer.
Like I said before, it's not in your purse. Where is it?
I have it on me.
Oh.
Much safer than a purse.
Yeah. What's it all about, Candy?
Honestly, Mallard, dear, I can't tell. I really don't know.
What's the information?
I don't know.
Who killed Ruth Moreland?
I don't know.
You know, Candy, sometimes our friendship makes my job awfully tough. Okay, so we don't know nothing. The chief is terribly unhappy about this whole thing. And take my advice. Don't go on any long trips.
I wobbled to my feet and Mallard took me back down to the waterfront to get my car. Then he patted me on the hand and I went home. Now I was more than just curious. If somebody tagged my head with a sap, I wanted to know what the reason was. So throwing etiquette to the wind, I reached down inside where I was keeping the letter and opened the envelope. Addressed to Hans Mittelstadt, it read, "Too many after Formula 12K have decided on this method. In case my heart goes bad, you will receive this. Look for the collar on shake. Keep up the good work. Jerry." Now, where was I? Look for a collar on Jake. Jake who? Whom? What sort of collar? Barrymore, Prince of Wales, Hoover? In spite of the Gene Krupa symphony going on in my head, I wanted to hear more. The only chance of getting the same was to revisit the late Dr. Jerome Moreland's house in Berkeley. I eased back over the Bay Bridge, held out my hand with two bits at the toll gate, held my breath as I passed the clam flats, and whipped up into the hills. There it was, the house where Rembrandt and I had heard the late scientist calling. Naturally, it was locked, but I knew a way to get in. Suddenly, I was. I probed about, expecting nothing, and found just that. Nothing. I tried the back door. It led out onto a terraced patio. I came up short. There, under a tree, was a small boy sitting with a cat in his lap. The same cat, I imagined, that had frightened Rembrandt. Meow. Well, hello there, Sonny.
Hello.
What's your name?
Tommy. What's yours, lady?
Candy.
Oh, that's a pretty name.
Yes, it is. Very pretty. I hope I didn't startle you.
Well, yes, you did, frankly.
My apologies. I was looking for my son. He must have climbed over the fence. I didn't expect to find him here, now that both Dr. and Mrs. Moreland have passed away. Tommy, where have you been?
Right here, playing with the cat.
Yes, of course. Here, let me have the cat. That's a good lad. You come right home now. Mommy says that dinner is almost ready. Again, I'm sorry, miss. I hope I didn't frighten you. Come right home, Tommy.
That's a pretty cat, Tommy. How long have you had him?
Oh, he's not mine.
Oh?
He lives here with Mr. Moreland.
Oh, I see. Well, don't you think you better go along with your daddy?
That's not my daddy.
What? Who is he, Tommy?
I don't know. Never saw him before.
What do you know about that? Listen to me, Tommy. What's the cat's name?
Oh, Jake.
Oh, thanks, Tommy. I'll see you later. You've got one gross of popsicles coming on me. times I'm a dope. I should have sniffed something when the guy didn't question my presence in Moreland Yard. Now he had a head start on me. He'd disappeared around the corner of the house, and I ran over there. Nothing but fence. Only one way out, and that was over. I wasn't too familiar with fence-climbing tactics, but I could learn, and did in a hurry. I shimmied over to the other side just in time to catch a glimpse of my man with the cat clutched firmly under his arm. He was running down the back lot. There was a little stream running through the property, dividing the homes on one side of the block from those on the far side. I saw the plan he had in mind. He was going to cut across the small wooden footbridge, duck up through one of the yards on the other side, out in front, where he obviously had a car waiting for him. I saw I'd never be able to head him off on foot, so I ran back the way I came in, found my car, and whipped around to the other street. Empty. It was a one-way street, so I followed, taking what I thought would be the same course as my quarry. I must have gone about 15 blocks when all of a sudden I was confronted by one, a crowd, and two, a couple of very messy-looking cars embracing each other head-on. What's the commotion, officer?
Take a look. I shouldn't have to explain that.
Ooh, quite a tangle. Anyone hurt?
Yeah, the lady in the sedan is pretty banged up.
Oh.
The guy in the coupe is dead.
The guy in the... That's him.
What? You know him?
I know. Was there any sign of a cat, a black cat with white paws?
Have you been drinking, lady?
No, officer. That man had a cat with him.
I haven't seen any cats.
Oh.
I was only a block away when I heard the crash.
Then Jake's bound to be in the vicinity. Excuse me, officer. I've got to see a cat about a man. I got out of the car, left the officer with his mouth open and his arches flat. Now, if I was a cat, where would I go? Someplace away from the confusion of people and wrecked automobiles. That's where I looked, and sure enough, I found Jake in 5 minutes. I picked him up, got back in the car, drove over to the Hall of Justice in San Francisco. I didn't have to worry about my friend in the coupe. I knew where we would find him if we needed him, on a slab in the Berkeley morgue. I found Mallard sitting at his desk going over some papers. I walked in and plopped Jake the cat right in front of him.
Oh, what the? Get that thing out of here, Candy.
What's the matter, Mallard, dear? Is the great, bold Flatfoot scared a cat?
It doesn't look dignified. Get him out of here.
I have a hunch Jake is a very valuable cat. He belonged to the late Dr. Jerome Moreland.
What are you up to, Candy?
See that collar around Jake's neck? It has a little container on it. Pry it open, Mallard. I think we'll find something.
It's a solid little thing. Here, wait a minute. There we are.
Wait a minute. Come here, Jake, on the floor. That's it. What? Empty the tube, Mallard.
Well, what do you know about that? Microfilm.
And 5 will get you 10 that they contain the formula for Dr. Moreland's latest development.
Okay, Cupcake. Start unraveling the mystery.
Well, this is going to sound incredible, but it's true, so help me. Just before Dr. Moreland died on the couch, he gave me an envelope asking me to deliver it to the name on the outside. Hans Mittelstadt, Snug Harbor Hotel, Embarcadero, San Francisco Waterfront. That's where I got smacked over the head by Hans Mittelstadt himself. He'd read the accounts in the paper stating that I was present at Moreland's demise. He figured the good doctor had given me information to pass on, whacked me on the beanie, and went through my purse.
I'd like to have a talk with that guy.
It's too late, Mallard. He's busy atoning for his sins. He was killed this afternoon in an auto crash in Berkeley.
Well, that saves me a spot of work. I don't like guys who go around slugging my favorite private eye.
Oh. And when I got home after having my head examined by a sap, I decided to look at the message inside the envelope. I thought that if it was worth getting my skull cracked, I was entitled to snitch a look. The meat of the thing indicated that said Mittelstadt was to look for the collar on Jake. That left me nowhere, Mallard, until I got to thinking about what Rembrandt had said earlier. It was the cat. I had kidded Rembrandt about that. Then I did some more thinking. It was just a hunch, but it worked. A little boy told me the cat's name was Jake. The cat carried vital information in that thing on his collar. Just how vital remains to be seen when you have your boys enlarge the microfilm.
You were right. It is incredible, Candy. Hey, how about Mrs. Moreland? How did she figure in the deal?
The way I get it is this. Moreland and Mittelstadt had worked together. Just recently, Moreland had finished his formula. He'd been working night and day. As a matter of fact, that's what brought on his fatal heart attack. In his type of work, he trusted no one except Hans Mittelstadt. A bad trust, as Mittelstadt was a foreign agent, and he was here for the express purpose of getting the facts and figures away from Moreland. He became impatient, bumped into Mrs. Moreland on her way to call the doctor, forced her to go to his hotel, where he tried to make her tell him where the doctor kept his records. She wouldn't talk, so in a wild burst of frenzy, he choked her to death. That was when I walked in, shortly after.
These spy boys are tough cookies.
Yes, but not especially smart. If he'd been patient, I'd have given him that information willingly, according to Dr. Moreland's dying request. Isn't that irony for you?
That's right. The poor dope was bilked by his own chicanery.
As it was, he almost got away with it. If it hadn't been for that auto wreck, he'd have been off and running back to his comrades, and I used the word deliberately.
Well, Candy, I got to admit, you used your head on this one.
I most certainly did. I've still got the lump. Come on, Mallard, knock off for a little while. You can buy me a Gibson.
Oh, a Gibson? Mm-hmm. Sure. You got one coming.
And while we're at it, one big bowl of milk for Jake. Straight.
You've been listening to a recreation by ART of Candy Matson, Yukon 28209. Originally broadcast on June 3rd, 1950, directed by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Ruth Last as Candy Matson, with Esther McVeigh as Rembrandt, and Pat McNally, Marge Lutton, Joy Jackson, Kim Turner, Mary Moore Campagna, and David Van Meter. Sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Playback by Rodney Weichel. Engineering by Donald Zonker, and produced by Joy Jackson. The original broadcast starred Natalie Masters as Candy and was written by Monty Masters and came from San Francisco on NBC. This has been Cole Hornaday announcing. This is ART, the American Radio Theater.
Bird's Eye Frosted Foods present Bird's Eye Open House, starring Dinah Shore, with her special guest, Groucho Marx. Take it away, Dinah.
Well, what do you know? He smiled at me in my dreams last night. My dreams are getting better all the time. And what do you know? He looked at me with a different light. My dreams are getting better all the time. To think that we were strangers a couple of nights ago. And though it's a dream, I never dreamed he'd ever say hello. Maybe tonight I'll hold him tight when the moonbeams shine. My dreams are getting better all the time. Strangers a couple of nights ago. And though it's a dream, I never dreamed he'd ever say hello. Well, maybe tonight I'll hold him tight when the moonbeams shine. My dreams are getting better all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, how you fellas?
Hi.
Oh, I'm fine. And now I want to welcome all of you to another session of our Bird's Eye Open House. As usual, Robert Emmett Dolan and his orchestra are here to make music for you, and Joe Lilly and his chorus are here to sing for you. And to amuse you, we're indeed fortunate to have Groucho Marx, a man who has made people laugh all over the world. But here's a man who only last week made an old lady laugh in Glendale, Harry Von Zell.
Fine kind of an introduction. Well, go ahead, Dinah. Have your fun. I can't get sore about it. Not after the time I had at your house last night.
Oh, well, I'm certainly glad you enjoyed yourself, Harry.
Oh, I sure did. And the house looked lovely, the way you carried out that St. Patrick's Day motive with everything in green, you know.
Yes. Especially your face after the fifth martini.
Yeah. Well, don't let that fool you, Dinah. I don't care a fig about martinis, actually. I mean, don't. It's just that I plan adding a new room to my house, you see.
Martini, the room. What has that got to do with you drinking so many martinis?
On account of the lumber shortage, I'm collecting as many toothpicks as I can. Isn't that silly?
Well, now I've heard them all.
Yeah.
Harry, after spending all day cooking, it sure did my heart good to see you enjoy the food so much.
Didn't I, though? Well, everything was delicious. That fried chicken was out of this world, Dinah.
Well, thank you.
Way out of this world. Tell me, was it really southern fried?
Was it really southern fried?
Yeah.
Well, Harry, I put some of it in the icebox next to a piece of Yankee pot roast and it got right up and walked out.
Well, Dinah, I've sort of been stalling around hoping that you would mention the young lady I escorted to your house last night.
What about her?
What about her? Well, Dinah, she happens to be the pin girl of the neighborhood.
You mean the pin-up girl?
I mean pin girl. She works in a bowling alley.
Oh, set them up in the other alley, Joel Lilly, please.
Evelina, won't you ever take a shine to that moon? Evelina, ain't you bothered by the bobolink's coon? Tell me how long you're gonna keep delaying the day. Don't you reckon it's wrong
trifling with April this way?
Baby, Evelina, won't you pay a little mind to me soon? Wake up, the earth is fair, the fruit is fine. But what's the use of smelling watermelon clinging to another palace vine? Evelina, won't you roll off that vine and be mine? Wake up, the earth is fair, the fruit is fine. But what's the use of smelling watermelon growing on another fella's vine? Oh, Evelina, won't you roll right off the vine and be mine? Roll off the vine and be mine. All mine, all mine, all mine.
That was really swell. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you...
I hate to interrupt this way, monsieur, but... then what does it matter? Just so long as we could be together again. Isn't it heavenly?
Isn't it heavenly? Well, I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Oh, there's no use pretending, monsieur. I love you madly. Madly I love you!
Well, this is so sudden. I'm very flattered, but... Well, why don't you fall in love with a girl your own age?
Oh, I did love a girl my own age, but alas, she loved another.
Oh, well, whom did she love?
Frank Sinatra. Gosh, did I burn. I was so angry. I challenged that Sinatra guy to a fight. But
He wouldn't fight me.
He wouldn't?
No, not unless I took off 30 pounds.
Well, tell me, what did you do to win her love?
Oh, I tried everything. Like, I used to bring her a daisy every day. Every day for 5 weeks, I'd bring her a daisy. Finally, I had to quit.
Why?
The daisy started to get shabby. It was then that I fell in love with you. Oh, what your singing does to me. Gosh, if you'd only sing something. I mean, just to me.
Well, I'd be glad to. Here, hold my hand. I'll be loving you always. Hey, Harry, help. Come here, Harry, quick.
What's the matter? What's all the excitement about, Dad?
That boy over there, he's unconscious.
Yeah, well, stand aside, gal. I'll bring the boy, too.
Have you got smelling salts?
No, I've got something much better than smelling salts.
What's that?
Spinach.
Spinach!
Yes, son, bird's eye, quick frozen spinach.
Spinach.
Yes, indeed, luscious, beautiful green spinach with all that wonderful fresh from the garden flavor and the vitamins and minerals sealed in by quick freezing. Yeah, just look at you, boy. A moment ago, you were unconscious. You're not much better now. But the fact of the matter is, just one mention of bird's eye spinach, and you're all right.
Oh, spinach. Spinach? Dinah, this is torture. He speaks of spinach while I suffer because of my love for you.
Oh, well, now, it can't really be that bad.
Oh, but it is. Why, for weeks I haven't even been able to sleep. What I need is some shut-eye.
What you need is some bird's eye. Oh, yeah. It's good for you, you know. And listen, tell your mother that bird's eye spinach is good for her, too. It's so easy to serve. There's no kitchen work, no washing or sorting, no sand or grit. Bird's eye has done all the work for her. So she gets nothing but glistening green leaves of perfectly clean, perfectly delicious spinach. So she only has to pop it out of the package into boiling water and serve it. Now, why not tell your mother to get a couple of packages? They're a real value right now. Really, son, you can't go wrong with that advice.
Well, honestly, mister, I appreciate your advice, but really, you don't know anything about love.
I don't know anything about... Are my ears... Did you hear what he said, Dinah?
Yes, Harry, I did, and the poor boy must be delirious.
Well, I don't know anything about love.
You certainly don't.
My boy, have you ever heard of Dante's love for Beatrice?
Uh-huh.
You have. Have you ever heard of Romeo's love for Juliet?
Yes, I did.
You did. All right, then stand back while I tell you of Von Zell's love for bird's eye spinach. I love it. Do you hear me? I love it.
I hear you.
Each tender green leaf I love. Each package I caress tenderly. Because
Each package what?
Each package serves four.
For goodness sake.
And there are no ration points needed for this wonderful bird's eye spinach. And it's so plentiful right now at your bird's eye dealer.
Well, I see it's no use, monsieur.
No.
But before you pass out of my life, you must do one thing for me.
Oh, I'll be glad to.
Thanks. I've been saving my money just to take you out once. We'll go to the finest restaurant in town. I'll order everything. At 8 o'clock, we'll have oysters Rockefeller. At 8:15, we'll have pheasant under glass. At 8:30, we'll have demi-tasse. And at 8:45, we'll have crepe Suzette's. But at 9 o'clock, I must leave you forever.
But why?
Because I've got to beat it home and do my homework.
Close to me, where he's supposed to be. He's home for a little while. I live for his kiss. at the skies when he looks in my eyes, and my knees grow weak with bliss. He's sort of changed, he's kind of different from the boy I used to know a while ago. Strange how much he says without a word, and when he holds my hand, I understand I'm his, but forevermore he's mine, mine alone. We'll have to part, but he's close to my heart for the little while. He's old. He's sort of changed. He's kind of different from the boy I used to know a while ago. Strange how much he says without a word, and when he holds my hand, I understand I'm his, but forevermore he's mine, mine alone. We'll have to part, but he's close to my heart for a little while.
Ladies and gentlemen, I take great pleasure in introducing a man of rare talent, our old friend Groucho Marx.
Hello, Dinah.
Hello, Groucho. How are you?
Dinah, dear, before we go any further, there's something I must confess to you.
What is it, Groucho?
It's just that every night you keep running through my head, running through my head. But last night a terrible thing happened.
What's that?
You slipped and stepped on my nose. but Dinah, why make any further pretense of our love? Marry me and we'll be as happy as two bugs in a rug. You got the money for the rugs, I've already got the money for the bugs. I can just see our little dream cottage. All our furniture will be made of maple. Bird's eye maple. You hear me?
I hear you.
Bird's eye maple. And in a year or so, who knows? We may even have a little spinach running around the table.
Oh, Groucho, you make the future look rosy.
Funny thing you should mention Rosie. We met in an ice cream parlor. She looked so lovely, standing there between the empty Coca-Cola bottles and the empty chewing gum counter.
Groucho, I've given you your last feed line. Now, tell me, what would you like to do tonight?
Dinah, I'd like to nick, but with all these people out here, maybe we better put on a play. By a strange coincidence, I have with me my own version of a movie based on the insurance business.
Oh, well, fine. Give me a copy, and I'll ask Harry to read the introduction. Bobby Dolan, please, music.
Now? Those of you who have seen that thrilling motion picture, Double Up, Here Comes the Indemnity, we'll remember that scene where the attractive young Mrs. Phoebe Martin is at home alone. Adventure, unknown to her, is about to enter her life as Groucho Higgins, an insurance agent, approaches her house. He rings the bell.
Oh, why can't I be left alone?
How do you do?
Won't you come in?
Well, I'm not going to stand out here and twiddle my briefcase. I represent the casualty insurance company.
Oh, well. Well, just pull up a policy and park your premium.
Say, you're looking mighty beautiful in that bathing suit.
Oh, I forgot. I was just taking a sun bath. I'll go upstairs and put some more clothes on.
Madam, is that trip necessary?
Well, I'll just put this wrap on.
Came to see Mr. Martin about some automobile insurance. I never met Martin. What's your husband like?
Maybe this will give you an idea. He drives a 1922 Essex, and the car looks better than he does. Incidentally, how tall are you?
6'1".
Oh, I love a man who's 6'1".
You know, your voice makes music and your eyes dance.
They do?
Yes, and they'd better quit before 12. Remember the curfew. Let's not make a sham of things. Can I kiss you?
But I don't even know your name.
Groucho Higgins.
Okay, pucker up.
Ah, your kisses set me on fire.
And your kisses set me on fire.
And what are we waiting for? Let's throw another log on the fire.
How I love a man who's 6'1". It's so heavenly here in your arms, darling. Do you know what it's like to have a husband who doesn't love you?
Frankly, no.
Well, it's torture. If I just look at another man, he goes mad. He's the most jealous man in the world.
Who can that be, my darling?
Oh, it's my husband. Take me in your arms again, my sweet. Come in. Kiss me again.
Ah, oh, good evening, dear. Who's the man you're kissing? Anyone I know?
No, he's an insurance salesman.
Oh, insurance, eh? Well, tell me, how's business?
Fine, I'm just clinching a big deal.
Well, as long as you're tied up, darling, I'll just go out to the kitchen and get dinner ready. See you later.
There. You see how insanely jealous the man is.
He certainly is. The beast.
And he's so cruel to me, too. Never a civil word. I can't stand it any longer. You must help me.
But how?
Tell me, do you happen to have a $50,000 insurance policy with you? One with the double indemnity clause covering sudden death?
Yes, I've got one right here.
Good. I'll get my husband to sign it, the beast.
$50,000 policy, eh? That'll mean $1.85 commission for me.
$1.85 commission? But don't you see, it can mean $100,000 for us. All you have to do is help me kill him.
Help you kill him? Never.
Please.
Okay.
I love a man who's 6'1".
I'm coming down the stretch. But listen, we must devise an ingenious plan. Nothing must be left to chance. It must be the perfect crime.
Yes, it must be the perfect crime. I'll call him. Oh, darling.
What is it, dear?
See how he speaks to me.
The beast.
Won't you come here a moment?
Yes, dear.
Would you please sign this?
Oh, all right. But I must hurry back to the kitchen and baste the roast.
A baste.
Where do I sign the paper, dear?
Right here.
Here's the pen.
Oh, thank you.
That's where I'll probably wind up.
Have you got the same script I've got?
Yes, December 11th, isn't that it?
All right, dear, now I've signed your paper, and I've got to go and baste the roast. Dear, what are you doing with that revolver?
I'm going to kill you.
Oh. Well... Listen, dear, don't forget.
Don't forget what?
Baste the roast.
What a cleverly devised murder. Say, you didn't forget a detail.
He's dead. He looks awful lying there.
Yes, he does. Slip a doily under him. Oh, well. Now we can be married.
Yes. But before we do, don't you think it would be sensible for you to take out an insurance policy? After all, darling, if anything should happen to you, you would want me to be taken care of now, wouldn't you?
By all means, dear. By a happy coincidence, I have another devil indemnity policy right here. I'll sign it. There.
Oh, how I love a man who's 6'1". Wait here, darling. I'll fix you a cup of coffee.
You're sweet.
There. The coffee's finished. Now, let's see. Where is that arsenic? I know I had it on my shopping list this morning. Oh, here it is. I'd better put in plenty. There. Oh, dear. Come in. Your coffee's ready.
Darling, you're so good to me. My, but that coffee smells good.
Here you are. What's the matter, dear?
I don't know. I feel so strange. It's getting dark. I think I'm going to die. But before I go, darling, there's one thing I must know.
What's that?
Does your coffee taste different lately?
Oh, poor Groucho. I hated to kill him. He was so tall. 6'1".
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm not 6'1". For your information, I'm only 5'8".
5'8"? Then how do you make yourself look 6'1"?
Because I wear my hair piled high upon my head.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please check out our website, www.AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. For more old-time radio listening, tune in to www.RadioOutOfThePast.org in the Fred Bertelsen Room. Hey, see you next time!